just love coming into that. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, because somebody has to. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, chairman of the board, Jacob, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. We're here. Anybody listening across civic media? Yes, it's Saturday. You're like, oh my God, I've been waiting to hear Busted Pencils. Well, here we are. Enjoy it. Turn up the radio. Roll down your windows. Let the world know that you are listening to the only awesome full 1 hour public education advocacy radio show. You know, just stormtroopers for democracy. Does that even work to put those two things together?
Sounds very negative. And
yeah, I know. I know. But,
you know, we're gonna have a whole special show on Jacob and I talking about Andor, and we got to get you on that, Tim. But
yeah, you gotta get me on that.
Of democracy seem like contradicting paradigms.
I know, but it's just that everything that's going on right now, it's kind of hard to not want to kind of say, it's just like, I'm in support of like, is like, can you say radical democracy? Is that, I feel like
direct, yeah, democracy, you know, supporters of the local. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess these days it is a little bit of like a radical reach.
That's what I meant. I mean, like to truly unequivocally advocate for, you know, measured in one way, dysfunctional democracy, the kind of where it goes back and forth, lots of discussions, nobody gets what they want. The reality is too, Johnny, we're trying to always say it's the common good is what matters, which means sometimes I'm not happy, sometimes you're not happy, but the overall general sense of the well-being of the community. You know, we're talking about that, and it feels like to come out and, you know, unequivocally say that's what we're about here on Busted Pencils. It feels like in the current climate and the current context that that might be, you know, construed as radical. I don't think it's radical, because as we say, you know what, we're incredibly critical of the political party system. You know, this is not an anti-Republican rant to be radical democracy. In fact, I would say being, quote, radical democracy is actually a stab at both current parties right now. Because in the past, it's not like Democrats, you know, other than wanting to claim they're there to stop the loss of democracy. But in practice, not a lot of what they were putting forward kind of really had the, particularly Johnny, who say that concern for the commons as the overriding principle, you know. So Jacob, there's my little bit of a, you know, kind of critique of the current political situation. I'm pointing out that everybody, yeah, Saturday. Hey, and if you're a downloader on Busted Pencils too, we love it. You know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, even some of you crazy weird people who are out there on the iHeart podcast app. I know there are a few people out there who are downloading on the iHeart podcast app. Thank you. We appreciate you.
We love you wherever you're listening from. Tim, and I always like to come back around to this term radical, because it gets thrown around in such a negative way. I know you're not using it in a negative
way.
No. But I mean, it's like, oh, everyone's shocked and they hear like, oh, it's radical thinking, or, you know, it's radical imagining of what public education can and ought to be, you know. And I like the term radical, not for its, you know, shock factor. I wish it didn't carry that, but for its, remember, I'm a words guy. I love what words carry forward in meaning, you know, its Latin origin in roots. And that's truly what democracy is about. We talked about it on the show earlier this week, you know, getting to our local roots of democracy, really explaining about how decentralized decision-making is its core democracy, right? Decisions being made by those directly impacted by the decision.
Right.
So there you go. It's radical in its very word sense, and its, you know, dictionary definition of the term. You have radical to be at the roots of decision making. So together, you know, I think it is radical, but I think it's reclaiming radical from, you know, maybe a certain particular leader,
right,
who likes to say, "Ah, there's really radical bad things happening in a particular part of our country right now." That's me kind of poking the bear a little bit about what's happening in Southern California and my utter disgust for the inflammatory reaction of the federal government and the dismissal of localized local governance.
Right. You know, those closest to the, or at least closer. Closer, right.
I wouldn't exactly say Gavin Newsom is closest to,
no,
say, the uprisings from people who are saying these ICE raids are not okay with our community, but closer than, say, the federal government. And so that's, you know, listener, that's us just recapping a little bit as we're learning from this week, from our roots, you know, the radical relationships of democracy and how that's connected to education. So we'll go in and out of that right this week.
Because we got to get Jacob to comment. He's laughing there. Jacob, what's going on, man?
Sorry. It has nothing to do with what you're saying, really. Partially. Because Johnny's talking about the roots of words, and I made a joke to myself in my mind that made me laugh a lot. You know, because we're talking about democracy, right, guys? And you break it down to the roots. It's Greek, demos kratia. That's the etymology of the word, which means people's choice awards. And that's just making me laugh so much. It's so dumb.
Yeah, the people's choice.
Sorry. Yeah.
What? I would love to have that skill set that you just showed us, Jacob, the ability to tell a joke to yourself in your head and laugh out loud. Like we didn't hear you, but I could see you just like Jacob's laughing. I didn't even hear Johnny being funny.
I'm sorry. It was just, it's so dumb that the People's Choice Awards. What's going on in my mind, guys?
Well, People's Choice Awards, Stormtroopers for Democracy. Yeah. Hey, you know what? It's one of those.
They can't all be winners, Tim.
We can't. And, you know, sometimes it's okay to just be a spectator, right? You know, some put it forward. But that's not what we're trying to do here in Busted
Pedophiles. Democracy is not a spectator
sport. It's not a spectator sport. And, you know, when it comes to, again, back to public education and realizing, hey, the foundation of democracy in America has a profound link to our public education system that has, and I know this is going to drive a couple people crazy, but its number one main goal is not math and reading scores on NAEP tests. It is the promotion of civic virtue, understanding what it means to live and be a responsible citizen in a democracy. And Johnny, that's where, you know, I even now think about, you know, the amount of bad rap that public schools have taken. And I point out, too, that I myself have been one of those critics. And it's not really the critic of public school that bothered me. It was always the distance that public schools, particularly, you know, late 90s through the 2000s, through the new No Child Left Behind years, through the Race to the Top years, moved radically away from the mission of public education and became uber focused on standardized test scores. And, you know, I have no research to back this up. I just have my own thought process that puts me together. But I think the effects of distancing public education from the mission of democracy, I think we're seeing it right now. You know, people say, I don't know, you're going to push. I'm not saying it's a research assertion. I'm saying it's a Tim's observation of the world and going, you know what? We spend 20 years focusing on stupid math and reading scores. Hey, are we really that unbelieving that a lot of potentially our young adults and even some, you know, more, I don't want to say aging adults, but have lost that kind of sense of going, what does it mean to be a citizen of America in a Republican democracy? What does it mean? And I don't, you know, right? Kind of putting this forward. Hey, you know what, though? guess what those 20 some years of focusing on math and reading scores did? Nothing. Nothing.
Well, I'm going to push back on that, Tim, because I think you're sounding a little kids these days, a little bit, get off my lawn. There I say a little boomer, and you're not usually that guy. So, but I'm going to, because I think there's some real truth to this, like the emphasis on, or the narrow focus of prioritizing math, reading, math, reading, math, reading. Every elementary teacher out there listening is like, yeah, seriously, because we've all been there where it's like, well, math, reading, math, reading, math, reading. And we say, why? Well, we get it. Math and reading is important, mm-hmm. right? And so are science, and so are social studies, and so is art class. But we've seen the emphasis because of the high stakes testing, and in mm-hmm. particular, you're referencing like our, dare I say, like our infatuation, our obsession with numbers and test scores as a measure. And that narrow focus has certainly had an impact. I think you're referring to that. But I'll offer to you that, you know, and I'll stick with our starting metaphor of radical. If public education is the root system, we say the foundation, and I like foundation too, but that's a little more like human built, mm-hmm. the metaphor of radical root. If public education is the root system of a strong democracy, you know, I would say, especially as that's the math teacher in me coming out, but, you know, a balance that being a productive, you know, generative, caring citizen in our communities also requires literacy, mathematics, literacy, right. You know. So there was a balance across those. Tim, I was just kind of pushing because you were, I'm teasing because you were coming off as like, well, we spent too much time on the math and too much time on the reading and not enough time on the caring. And I think kids these days, I'm going to be the kids these days guy, but with a little bit of a differing of view, because we're, Tim, you and I are kind of like those guys in the Muppets up in the, up in the little balcony. We're like, yeah, this is what's going on, and we're knuckleheads up there. But the idea being like kids, I think, especially in this current generation, remember their educational social experiences and their learning forged in the crucible of COVID-19 and of the largest mm-hmm. social uprising of all of our lifetimes are just continuing. And we're seeing that like so many citizens of this country, around the country this week especially, are saying, holy smokes, this is not something we're okay with. And it's coming to head in some ways that are demanding attention to it in classrooms around the country. So I think, you know, that we're going to see more of a balancing. And I think we probably have been seeing that because these kids are really well balanced. Nope. Like they kind of understand that democracy is not only just slipping away, but more than that, the world they want to be in and they want for their futures and for their children's futures is radically different. There, I use it again, radically different than the kind of autocracy we have right now.
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now, when we come back though, kids these days, way too much use of the cell phones and smartphones. Yeah, oh, that's right. That's it. Get off my lawn. Oh, but come back to our lawn right when we get back. Beat there, that little baser. It's Busted Pencils. I know that's what you said when you heard that. Dr. Tim, Dr. Johnny, Jacob, Chairman of the Boards. Yeah, we're here Saturday across all the civic media apps, stations. If you're listening live, we said earlier, roll down those windows, let everybody hear it. If you're downloading the show, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, there's a comment section, there's a rate section. Let us know what you think of the show. We love to hear your comments. And if you don't like us, we want to hear from that. Tell us what it is, because we probably will disagree with you, but it's worth, you know, occasionally looking. But Johnny, okay, get off my lawn. All right. Is this, though, I have a feeling that when I kind of bring this one up, that I'm not sure if we're going to be classified as get off my lawn, people, or if we're potentially going to be looking at this issue and saying, I don't know, but the idea, you heard me, cell phones. And in fact, you know, kind of bringing this up, just pointing out there, out of K-12 Dive, which is, you know, one of our go-to media sources, Virginia enacts ban on school cell phone use, also limits on social media. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin recently signed legislation banning cell phone use during school hours for all students. The law makes Virginia the 21st state to ban or limit cell phones in schools, according to the legislation. Also, starting January of 26, which is too far off, children in Virginia under the age of 16 will only be allowed to use social media outside of school for 1 hour per day under another law. So thinking about that, Johnny, is this too much regulation of social media, which is this communication tool that's essential, or is this a good thing? And I'm going to say, this is a good thing, man. I think this is long overdue. And the fact is that, you know, kids, yeah, I've been there, I've seen it. And I think, Johnny, you're going to talk about more direct experience, actually, the what you're seeing when things like this happen. But you know what? 6 hours a day in a school day, not having access to social media on a cell phone, I think that's a good thing, you know? And if you're going to be, people are like, Tim, you were just ranting though about then having all this time on math and reading. That just means that they're going to force them to pay attention to irrelevant stuff. Well, I don't know, but I think this is a good thing. Johnny, I know this is our short segment, so I'll let you feed in here.
Well, Tim, I think it's a good take. You know, it's not necessarily a hot take. 77% of schools in this country, according to the, you know, National Center for Educational Statistics, have a policy that limits or forbids or bans. I kind of cringe at those words, but they're the words we have for it. You know, cell phone usage during school time, like learning time. And like anything we know involving youth, if you ban it, you're pretty much locked in that it's going to be used even more. And so I'm going to sound like a broken record. When things happen like this in a democracy, well, what's the definition of democracy? Decisions made by those impacted directly by the decision. And I've seen successfully, and I'm seeing this play out successfully from student perspectives, which is ultimately the most important one here, even though we do know that overusage of cell phone and, you know, prolonged time on social media, you know, hinders your education. It also hinders your ability to just be well grounded, connected, and socializing with your peers. But, you know, that's us nerding out to it. And you can tell a 13 or 14 or 15 year old that, and, you know, where they're at with what values them. Remember, being in that age, it's the connections to their friends. And for a lot of them, human connection is technologically mediated. So schools that are doing this ban are doing a great job of sort of providing an opportunity to reconnect in a human, non-technologically mediated way. And by golly, guess what kids are saying? We like this. I almost fell out of my chair. You know, I've spent the better part of the spring every year talking to teachers and being in schools, learning like what's happening in your school. And in particular, visited a handful of schools who not only reported that they had pretty strict rules of cell phone usage, but whose students really enjoyed that. And I said, I gotta really hear from those students. They must be prepping these kids for this. And you know, to some degree, they always tell me kind of what I might want to hear, but you know, they break down past those barriers a bit. And they were saying things like, hey, it's fine. You could kind of use your phone sometimes, like you can sneak it in your locker and you can have it, you know, in your pocket. But we really like that we are able to be in conversations together. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember, these are kids, if they're in like middle school and high school, whose formative years in elementary were spent in isolation.
Right.
And you talk about like the traumas of coming out of COVID learning. I mean, young people want to connect with other young people. And certainly we know that's facilitated tremendously by technology these days, i.e. social media apps and all these things. But having a break from those is something young people are reporting as that they value. And that's aligned with the statistics in the research, right, Tim? Learning is better. Mental health is better. Yeah. Our social relational skills improve. And by golly, these are, dare I say it, bans or regulations I'm kind of down for.
I love it because, you know, here it is, an adult decision that kids are agreeing with. Yeah. That in itself is historic. All right, though, when we come back, maybe we'll make history because, Johnny, I got to wonder, what about social media itself? Bust the pencils when we get back. Got to be careful. I might hit my head off the mic and fall over, and then you guys will be without a co-host and another person there.
I don't want you to fall over in your shower there, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, coming from the bathroom that is my new Busted Pencils studio. No, we're just joking. Dr. Tim Slegger, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, Busted Pencils, one full hour. Okay, so cell phone banning, and Johnny, I like the way you kind of actually put this out to say even more, because when you just say 21 states, it's like, wow, only 21 states. And the reality is these are states that have said statewide, we've now codified this into law.
Yeah, we've got almost 80% of public schools in this country. Yeah,
local school districts themselves are acting locally, Johnny, making decisions for themselves about what they're seeing and what makes sense. And actually 80% of all public schools are saying, you know what, this is a problem, and it's not about get off my lawn.
Well, where it's successful, Tim, is when it's not adults saying, here's a decision we made for you. Remember that kids are part of a democracy.
Right.
And decentralized decision-making, we're hammering at home that that's the roots of democracy. Well, guess what? It works really well in the schools and the districts where they've said, like, hey, we are making this rule because we want you to engage differently, to have a break, to have a balance. We're not saying phones are bad, put them away, or you're going to cheat if your phone is out. Well, I'm sure some people are, but any teacher listening, you've been there with us. I mean, there were cell phones in the classroom when I was still teaching, and, you know, there was sort of an art to making sure they weren't a distraction. And they certainly were not equipped with as many potentially harmful or relationship altering distractions as exist now. So I think that's a nice segue too, Tim, into kind of you left us off at the break. You were saying you also kind of feel like a get off my lawn guy about social media, but I want you to bring that into the fold.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's an even when I'm hearing students tell me why they enjoy that their teachers hold them accountable to, you know, not having their phones out in class, you know, or things like that, as not part of the school day, what they're valuing, what I hear them is they're valuing their time in social gathering together in a very different way. So okay. I think that's related to your concern about social media. Why don't you let that rip and let's chew on it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's it, because to go further, and there's been a lot of discussion around the whole idea of access to social media from the standpoint of saying, at what age should anybody have access to this media outlet, you know, never world of this, and saying, you know, I mean, we limit certain things by age for all kinds of things, because we say there's, you know, you're not ready. Your body is physically not, you know, mature enough. The brain isn't ready. And so, you know, we do this all over the place. Social media, you know, right away when people started saying, wait a minute, we want, you know, you're talking about banning kids from social media. You're like going, yeah, that's what we're talking about. Because now that we've seen its effects on kids, particularly mental health, and in fact, one of the statistics here, research from Common Sense Media, finds that one in four students themselves realize the effect, the negative effect social media has on their mental health. The other caveat in here is that they realize, and this is maybe why the quote ban in school on cell phones really for social media, and we're saying it has truly an addictive property. And students themselves find that they can't get off it, even when they are engaging in social media experiences that are demoralizing, that are traumatic, that have, you know, a direct effect on their mental health, because it has that ability. In fact, it was built in by tech companies to be addictive, and it rewards you for negative behaviors. It's engineered to keep you in there. And the more outrageous, the more traumatic, the more horrible, the more it sucks you in. And I'm going to tell you this, me banning myself from social media was liberating, because I'm telling you, the effect on my mental health of being sucked into arguments on Facebook and arguments on Twitter and just reading those things as if all this stuff, you know, has a room, getting out of it, dropping it, I feel better. Truly, I feel better. I'm not thinking about, boy, that person last night really has got me going. And, you know, hey, and then you think about kids. And so we say, should there be a ban? Well, I've heard this. Let me just finish this thought, Johnny. The point of saying, well, you know, it's a free speech issue. I don't know, but, you know, in social media companies are not going to engineer the technology, even though they could very easily engineer this technology to restrict access in ways they're not going to. So do we need to legislate that these media companies, social media companies, create barriers that allow for parents to make decisions about how long kids can get on social media a day? My answer is hell yeah.
Well, Tim, I mean, you're kind of all over the place on
this. I know.
But I want to say, like, congratulations on you finding that a break from social media brought you joy, gave you, you know, distance from those behaviors. And I'm going to say also belong to you and your usage of social media.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of agree with you, because me limiting my time on social media, I've seen an increase in my mental health and well-being. But we're from a different generation. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about this, Tim, is, and no technology is completely culturally neutral. You know, you allude to that, but you also kind of sound a little conspiracy theorist around, like, these tech companies are trying to trick these kids. But I'm with you in terms of that it is opened up and rewritten, maybe we say, the blueprint, or it's woven itself into the fabric of our social relationships in a way, and this is something that's interesting, in a way that is almost inescapable in terms of if you're a young person right now. It's a little different, Tim, for some old guys who, you know, we have families, we have friends, we have we actually learn to make relationships before this was even a thing. And so to think about, you know, say being in like 7th grade or 10th grade or 11th grade and to check out completely from social media or to not be engaged is also isolating. And so what's interesting is that for every major way that social media is studied for its negative impacts, there are also a lot of positive impacts, which like reminds me of this kind of thing. It's like, hey, let's figure out for each person, and especially for young people, how they can be, again, part of the decision-making and the know-how, which we know as you're learning, you need some scaffolding and some boundaries around. How do we balance how helpful something is to our lives and how hurtful it is to our lives? And I think it's linked to this, a real practical or pragmatic solution, Tim, is this link that say, hey, we're not telling you social media is bad. We also know it has some really good things. But what we know as adults and professionals in community, i.e. your teachers, is that if you take a break from it, you're going to be more well-rounded. You're going to breathe a little bit. Because, Tim, remember, just being at school subjected you to, like, potentially being bullied. I mean, every single listener, no matter how popular or cool you were in your middle school years, you know, functioned in a social space where you're like, if I say the wrong thing or I do the wrong thing or I wore the wrong thing, you know, I could be part of this. But we also got to go home. We also got to leave school. We also got to go into particular classrooms where there was breaks from the connection to that. So I love where things are kind of organically landing in regards to this. But Tim, I'm also really interested in this. I think it's related, and it's not me pushing back against you, although I did a little on that because I'm like, hey, it's a little of both, Tim. Like, you highlighted the negative stuff, but for all those pieces too, it brings, you know, access to awareness of other people's health issues around the world, you know, increased connection to larger and diverse communities. So there's all these kinds of different ways that it has positive values as well as it has negative values. But one thing I'm really interested in, Tim, because unregulated, and I'm not a big fan of like the government regulating this for us. I think parents, families, children, I'm big as teachers, we empower kids to make choices and we help them be aware of this. I'm the same way with video games and things. You kind of have to learn, right? And the adults in your community help you when you're still forming that capacity in your frontal lobe, but how to regulate something. And I agree with you, Tim, that the ways that they're designed to be addictive makes that regulating hard, but that's part of the world that they're in. But I want to come back around to this. There's a concept that's been, you know, written about, tossed around, and spoken about, especially in the last year or so. And I think it's really timely and it's associated. But we are entering an era where we have a generation. I know we talk about Gen Y, Gen Z, all of that. But we really have a broad kind of label for understanding young people right now as the anxious generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some real truth I've been reading, you know, about the anxious generation, And one of the things we do know, Tim, is that like anxiety is at an all-time high.
It's also bad. I think
we know more about diagnosing it, and we've had more widespread trauma in the last few years than previous generations. But in general, what we do know about engagement in social media and prolonged engagement with social media, like several hours and hours a day, it contributes to an increased anxiety. And we are in this anxious generation. So I think it's like, I like to say, like, as educators, one of our roles is to empower our decision makers, our students and families with this information of saying, hey, if you're feeling anxious, limiting your time on social media is probably going to help you a bit. Also understanding, like, banning you from it is probably only going to make you more anxious, right? Or like cutting you out, as it is social isolation for young people. Their identities are so strongly woven into their social connections through social media platforms. That it is, they are highly addicted to it, but also dependent on. So I think like scaffolding that is really important. But I do see those two things connecting, like the anxious generation and how much damn time we are on these apps and platforms.
Yeah, it is that. And, you know, I'm going to go a little bit more. Yeah, we only got one more segment, you know, on Busted Pencils. Social media, let's stay on this topic. The banning,
Tim, you're sounding like Tipper Gore.
Well, when we get back, I want to ask producer Jacob. I got producer Jacob, and he's going to be on the spot when we get back. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, where we're speaking quietly during the breaks, practicing our NPR voices based on producer Jacob. No, we don't talk like that.
Thank you, Tim.
Hey, Jacob. All right, Jacob, you've been listening to the two old grumpy men up in the corner of the stage throwing insults at the Utes of America.
Yes.
Even though Johnny kind of loops back, though, and defends the Utes of America, too, at the same time. All right. What do you think, Jacob? I mean, you know, social media, cell phone use, school. I mean, you're closer to having had direct experience. And, you know, what do you make of this conversation we're having?
Well, first of all, Tim, I'm sick of hearing you old fogies prattle on. From your high horses about me and my one second, I just got a Twitter. No, my mother is not. Anyway,
got a tweet. I'm X.
I got an X. Oh, I just got an Instagram. Hold on, can we? Oh. All right. Anyway, look, I'm from the last generation, guys, that grew up between these two things of having cell phones around every second and then not before that, because I was born in 1999. So I got my first smartphone in high school instead of when I turned 4, like kids do now. So it's a little bit different. I think that I'm against banning things in general. I think people should be able to decide for themselves. I think that parents should ask themselves, where did this $1,400 thing come from? Did little Johnny go find it on his own? Or did I buy him this thing that's bad for him? I think that would be good. I think the same thing, whatever. Don't take away South Park from me. Turn your TV off if you don't like it, all right, buddy? But this is the big but here, Tim, and I cannot lie. I think that this is a big enough problem for young people right now that the government might want to consider getting involved with it. I think it can start with taking anonymity away from children on the internet. That's a big thing. You can be anybody on the internet, and you can say whatever you want and do whatever you want. I think maybe when you're under 18 years old, it would be better if we had a different system for you being on the internet. Maybe it's a bit more controlled. Maybe you're a bit more monitored than the general population. And of course, Facebook will tell you, Tim, that you cannot be under whatever 16 or 14 and be on Facebook.
Right.
That's just, you know, it doesn't happen to be true because there's no enforcement or way for them to know. But I think it is damaging for young people, Tim. I think people my age and a little bit younger and a little bit older than me spend a lot of time talking about and thinking about how negative social media is for us. I think we are just like you, Tim. We're the I got off of social media generation.
There it is. All right. Producer Jacob, you know, and thinking about hearing about that, and Jacob, you kind of introduced this where I'm, you know, putting out, and we don't have a whole lot of time, but you know, I put in the chat here, channels, the idea, access, unrestricted access to everything. Well, I think that we're in a position to say that certain things are not accessible to a certain age group, where right now with social media, as you said, Jacob, okay, you're not allowed on it. Okay, right. You know, any of the quote restricted sites, are you 18 years of age or not? Yes, boom. Okay, there's nothing there. And you know, there's a reason why you say, you know, Johnny, and I'm hoping that this tips a hat to what you were saying. There are positive social media channels out there. right? There are ways that social media can be beneficial for loneliness, for isolation and things like that. So let's actually say, you know what? Where are those places? Well, maybe we have an opening there, but just plain, you know, unrestricted access to everything. And some of it is, and we started the show before the show telling you about, you know, my own adult experience with a horrible movie, Jacob's Ladder, not our Jacob.
Yeah. My ladder's fine.
I'm traumatized by that movie. I wished I'd have never had access, and I wish I'd have never had a brother-in-law that made me watch it because I'm scarred. And I think there's a lot of scarring that happens when kids get into these unrestricted places across the internet and social media. And so, you know, yeah, I don't think I'm the
or Tim. You want the sticker on them? You want the sticker?
I don't know. I am not Tipper Gore.
You sound like her. That's why I'm gonna just refrain and be in the back. I think all those apps do have that age requirement, and that's on users and on parents. Just like, you know, my parents were awful parents for letting me listen to NWA and Public Enemy and all those bands with the parental guidance, explicit lyrics. And every parent that lets their kid play a video game that's for mature audiences is a bad parent. No. I mean, there's just some kind of way you gotta be making these decisions. But I like, Tim, how you advocate for we should do it with the best knowledge, right, of how we're being healthy together.
And you know the best knowledge, though? Now is time for your moment of zen. And if we do act in however small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents, and to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember, you can grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being part of Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny. We're here for you, and keep busting pencils.